You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Willkommen. Como están? This is the X-Men Podcast. I'm your host, Doc Coyle, and I think I have a case of the Mondays. My apologies, but it just goes that way sometime. It's finally starting to get a little hot here in Long Beach, California. We don't have central air, so we have to put in, you know, those window air conditioners, but we haven't had to use them yet. So it's one of those things where it just be hot. So I think it just makes you tired and lazy. So I just had one of those days, just sweaty and sticky. And I don't know. I think the emotional weight of the last, I guess, probably 15 months, maybe, but it feels more like the last 5 months or so was just, just kind of weighing on me and exhausting. Some days I'm just tired and I don't know. Directly what that's related to. I think there's ways around it, be it, you know, just living the right way is the way to, you know, you got to work out, you got to eat correctly, not drink too much and all that stuff, which has been a little bit hit or miss for me lately. But I think I need to find a new equilibrium and kind of a new, I guess, daily schedule regimen. So I don't know, some days I'm just feeling shot, and I'm the type of person, if I'm not as productive as I'd like to be, I get kind of depressed and I have all these things I want to work on, and you know, and I'm dealing with a lot of real life stuff in addition to that. So it's I don't know. Just figuring some things out. And that's how it goes sometimes. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. I'm not too down. I'm just, like I said, I'm just tired. And maybe that's just getting old. Maybe that's part of it. Sometimes you just shot. And I'm 40 now, and maybe that's what happened. I think I was talking to somebody, and I was like, I think this is everything that's gone on in the last year or so, it's like the first period of my life that truly kind of aged me physically. Because I think I've done pretty well with not looking too old or not looking my age, but some of these things just start catching up with you. Like the Bad Wolves video we put out, kind of showing DL, new singer, and I had like really big bags under my eyes, and people made some comments, and I was like, yeah, I just got off a plane that the night before and was dealing with my father's death and the funeral and moving things and just things I can't even talk about. And you know, so you understand how things like real life events start actually to age in that stress. So I don't know, I guess I think I'm yammering a little bit. I don't have any probably profound points. Got some good responses to last week's Q&A, made some news, people picked up the little God forbid headline there, so we'll see what happens with that. The Determination, the vinyl, is coming out next month on Record Store Day, so look out for that. And might make some merch too. We'll see. We're gonna look into that. All right, I'm gonna stop yammering because I just don't think I have a ton to say this week. And for that, I apologize. But hey, you know what? We can use a shorter show every now and then. They all don't have to be 3-hour epics. Okay, we have a sponsor this week, thankfully, and it's a band from Boston. They're called Silent Season, and we're going to play a track entitled Addiction. Silent Season with their brand new single Addiction. I hope you enjoyed it. I thought it sounded great, very well produced, very catchy, made for that, you know, kind of radio audience. And they've been around for quite some time, actually. They put out an album in 2012 entitled Break Me Down and an EP in 2019 called The War Within. And listen, they've done some really cool things. One of their biggest songs, I think, has over 2 million streams, which is pretty sick. And they've been played all over the radio, Sirius XM, Octane. They've toured with bands like Seven Dust, 10 Years, Gemini Syndrome, 12 Foot Ninja, and opened up other shows for Black Veil Brides, Hinder, Lacuna Coil, Nonpoint. The list goes on and on and on. And if you'd like to support the band, I suggest you go over to their website, which is silentseasonmusic.com. It has this brand new music video as well as all the links to their social media, and you can go support them. Tell them that the X-Men sent you. One thing they're doing, they haven't announced a new album, but they're kind of just doing singles, which I think is I listened to this to the Punk Rock NBA podcast They had Courtney from Spirit Box on. It was a great interview, but they were talking about how they kind of broke out just by doing singles. And I'm starting to think maybe this is like the way for newer bands instead of just doing albums, just because it's more expensive, it obviously takes longer, and you can kind of, maybe that's the way people are absorbing music currently. I don't know. I'm kind of fascinated, but so I think it's actually pretty smart. So go over to Silent Season, check them out, support them. If you would like to sponsor the show, just drop a DM on the social media, or you can shoot me an email at the xmanpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you, Silent Season. All right. We have, as legendary, if not the most legendary guest we've ever had on the X-Man podcast. And it makes me really, really happy. We have Mr. KK Downing, formerly of Judas Priest. One of the architects of heavy metal, period. And he couldn't have been nicer. Couldn't have been lovelier. It came about, I have to thank Jamie Roberts, who used to be do PR for Better Noise Music and is now freelance. And she totally hooked this up. All the love to her. So it came about not too long ago. And she said, "Hey, you want to talk to KK Downing?" And I was like, "How many fingers do I have to cut off?" So he is an X-Men, and he has a new band, KK's Priest, coming out with Ripper Owens, formerly of Judas Priest as well. And listen, I really don't think I have to intro much. I was just giddy, and it was a really great talk, and a little shorter because we only had a 40-minute time limit. So it's a little shorter than some of my shows, but I think it will be enjoyable for you guys nonetheless. So please check out my conversation with the legendary, the ultimate, the mighty KK Downing. All right, I guess Jamie's off. Well, KK, thank you so much for taking your time.
It's a pleasure, Doc. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Of course, yeah. This is pretty mind blowing for myself. So, the name of my show is The X-Man. And the way that started, I used to be in a band called God Forbid. We actually toured together, but on separate stages. We did God Forbid did Ozfest 2004.
Oh yeah, cool, very cool. I Jamie was telling me about Bad Wolves. I've heard of Bad Wolves.
Yeah, well, that's
your current band, yeah.
Yeah, well, Bad Wolves was a lot more successful than God Forbid.
Yeah,
it all comes around, but no, so. So the concept of the show was I was out of God Forbid, and I was in this period of my life where I didn't know what I was doing, where I was going, what my direction was. And so in many ways, you are welcome. First off, welcome to the X-Man Club.
Thank you very much.
But no, listen, it kind of all comes around, to have people like yourself who, essentially are responsible for this genre of music that I have the good fortune to be a part of. So I just want to thank you for being here. It just means the world to me.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Are you a guitar player, Doc?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
A guitar. Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I am. So it's it's funny. I got to. So I actually play in a band with Kirk and Rob from Metallica called the Wedding Band. And
oh right, yeah, cool.
So that band, it's all the songs they grew up with. So it's, we do some Priest, we do some Motorhead, yeah. We do some Sabbath. And so it's, I've gotten a chance to kind of to try on some of those riffs and the vibes. And it's very inspirational for me because I've been someone ever since I got into hard rock and metal, it's been very interested and in the history and where things where things come from. But anyway, enough about me. Let's talk about you.
But it's an interesting topic, really, because like I say, I do feel, well, I know for a fact I was there at the very, very beginning when it all started, and you have to go right the way back to about 1963, 64. Really, I think, how we actually got the genre, and it is well defined, isn't it, now, as I guess classic or true metal, you know?
Yeah,
I guess. But obviously there's elements of, because we were a heavy rock band as well, and we were a rock band before that. In people's, that was the terminology that people used, you know, all pretty much dirty words at the time, you know, because these genres were moving into a place where, you know, people, you know, they were kind of switching off from it, you know. But anyway, you know, we can talk about that, some of that, if you want to, but I don't want to. You go ahead, Doc. What was going to be your starting point here?
Well, actually,
the new record, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I always have my bullet points, but often conversations, you know, you have to kind of let them flow the way they're going to flow. So actually, because you brought that up and the genesis of the genre, I did have some questions about that. You know, what was for you going on during that time? You said you kind of mentioned, you know, the late 60s, where England specifically seemed to kind of be ahead of the curve on this with what you guys are doing, Iron Maiden, Black Sabbath, Saxon. Was there something specific socially or culturally going on that time that inspired that sound?
I think so, because I mean, I could sit here and talk for hours about the evolution of what I experienced, you know, because all of the other genres that existed when I was growing up, like pop and jazz and classical and whatever it was, none of that was of any interest to me at all, you know, and to the point where until I got to a certain age, until I heard something, I had no interest in music really at all. You know, I grew up with two sisters and they were listening to obviously Elvis and, you know, the Beatles and, you know, all kind of the Liverpool bands and stuff like that. But there wasn't anything around for like snotty little kids like me, impoverished kids, you know, because I grew up, it was obviously the background was pretty rough and tumble and, you know, and it was rough and it was poor, but so I could relate to blues music because that, you know, obviously the people obviously that were creating that music, Delta, Mississippi, whatever, wherever it was in America, you know, the great artists, you know, that started to become quite a big thing, you know, because people didn't have anything else really, you know. And we used to like to listen to that. And I'm not there. There was people there actually before me, probably by about a year or so, Jimmy Page, you know, Jeff Beck and all of these players, Eric Clapton, you know, they were all listening to the black blues artists, you know, because it was more meaningful and more soulful, you know, something more that they could digest, that they felt, you know, that they felt more a part of. And so the blues music was very, very important in England. But when we started to take it on, and I was there as well, because I went to see a lot of that great black blues players, you know, Freddie King, Albert King, you know, Sonny Terry, Brown and McGee, lots of these great artists would come to England and play, you know, before rock, before heavy rock, before any of those genres. And needless to say, because of all the guys we were listening, I didn't take to it like Eric Clapton and Peter Green and all of those guys, you know what I mean? But because they took to it, they formed what was we classed as progressive blues. Mm. Because if you take Cream, for example, they are the absolute ultimate progressive blues band because their influence, their music stemmed from the blues, but they did progressive solos, you know, which were incredible, you know, improvised solos. So it was, you know, another form of progressive blues. Fleetwood Mac, another great progressive blues band. When you think that they did songs like Albatross, and Green Man Alishi and Oh Well. You know, this is an incredible progressive blues band. And there were lots of others, you know, whether it was Free or whatever, some more progressive than others. But we still didn't have the music for me. I didn't hear it. I liked it, and I was a fan, and I went to see all of these bands multiple times. But when the great Jimi Hendrix came over, you know, I must tell you a little story before then. The first time I really heard something that sounded what I liked was 1965, You Really Got Me by the Kinks. This was different. This was a riff. It wasn't blues. It wasn't blues. It wasn't pop. That they were kind of known as, like, you know, a pop band, but this was different. Something about it, I liked it. So I used to play it over and over again, you know. And there's a couple of things that the early Stones did, you know, and the Troggs, you know, Wild Thing, I like that. You know, there's bits and pieces. Barry McGuire did Eve of Destruction. I liked it. What was it about that? I liked it. It was dark. It was meaningful. It was, you know what I mean? I was looking for something that fitted. But when the great Jimi Hendrix came over and I saw him in 1967, that was, you know, obviously I could hear it on the record, but when I experienced it live, you know, it was the greatest name for a band. It was an experience to see him, you know, in those early years when he was unaffected by lots of things that crept into his life. You know, lots of things were going on in management and stuff like that, and obviously whatever else crept into his life that creeps into rock stars' lives. But when he was fresh and he was hungry and he literally was on fire, you know, but that's when I really heard what I wanted to hear. And it wasn't in every song, but it was in a lot of those songs, you know. I don't want to absorb too much of your time. So now we've got another interview, you know, lined up. But you know, this is what got into. I ran out and bought a guitar for £10. I did, you know, because I saw Jimmy 6 times.
Wow.
But the thing is, I wasn't the only kid experiencing this. There was lots of others. If we want to know where rock came from, and heavy rock and hard rock and heavy metal, this is the beginning of it all, because, you know, these are more, when you hear riffs like Purple Haze, you know, and you know, I mean, these songs, you know, they're just so special. And Foxy Lady, you think, oh my God, why does this have a heaviness about it? You know, I mean, it sounds massively heavy, you know. And so you start to, as a young guitar player, you start to think, why is this heavy? It's riff orientated. We know that, but it's got these magic ingredients to me that appease me, instead of listening to, you know, to the music that had a healing effect of everybody and got them through a working day or through their days of oppression, you know, this was heavy metal was the music that did it for me, and I knew that we've got to have more of this. Bands have got to create more of this, and so that was my journey. My road started there. To try to create more of this style of music for people like me, you know, we weren't working in cotton fields and we weren't there on the chain gang and that, but we were living a life of oppression because it was rough back those days. It was not too long after the Second World War, you know.
You're still on rationing.
It was, yeah. So I didn't want to bore everybody to death, but this is what the journey that I've been on. And it brings me to where I am now. It's a time it's a journey that's still continuing. So I'm in a very happy and content part of my life now.
Right on. So I think with the Hendrix thing, it had so much to do with the heaviness, with tonality, and like, you know, the fuzz that he was using, and just the actual sound of the guitar.
It's little bits of everything, but the main criteria is their riff based songs, you know.
Yeah.
Which was a different thing. It was a different thing, you know. Whereas everything else before was, if it wasn't blues, it was more chordal, you know. And but the riff thing, you know. And this is why, you know, it stemmed from progressive blues originally, because Jimmy was a great blues player, you know. And he played a lot of songs that were progressive blues to me. When Cries Mary to me is like Fleetwood Mac did. I mean, you listen to Albatross, but that is progressive blues, you know. But without going into too much detail there, because I can talk for anyone.
Actually, one more question about that era, and this is just more just to kind of pique my own curiosity. Was Thin Lizzy kind of ahead of the curve with the dual guitar harmony thing before you guys and Priest? Were they an influence on that? Or is there something, or are you guys concurrent with them?
No, because we used to tour. We played a lot of gigs with Thin Lizzy when they were just a three-piece.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we used to go up and down the motorways playing clubs. We would play the same venues, you know.
Yeah.
But every now and again, we would play together, which was great to do, you know. They were a bit bigger than us at the time, so we would usually support them, go on first, you know. And I don't know when they actually started the two guitar thing. But having said that, we were a four-piece at the time. There was just me on guitar, I think. The last time we played with... I can't remember the last time we played with, you know, is it? But, so it was such a long time ago. But, yeah, we used to go up and down the freeways, and we had, like, the equivalent to your truck stops. We would have something to eat, park up the van, and sleep in the van. You know, that's what we used to, but there used to be other bands there, you know, all like England's a much smaller country. We call them motorway services. You sometimes just three or four bands all asleep there. I can remember one night we were there, Thin Lizzy's van was there. We pulled up next to them. We all went to sleep and we would hear this big moaning and groaning in the middle of the night, would keep waking us up, and it was Phil, because he had toothache. He was in the van next door, so we had to drive over the other side of the car park and park up there, because he was keeping us awake, because he was really loud and in pain with toothache, you know. So, funny story.
I've been there on tour with my wisdom tooth was coming in 2005, actually. I was in the airport in Gothenburg waiting to go home right before Christmas, so I've definitely been there. So let's talk about what's going on now. It's been about a decade since you were active with Judas Priest. Why now? I mean, have you been planning on making record for years, or is this something that kind of came to be just recently?
No, a friend talked me into doing a few songs with Ross the Boss at Bloodsock Festival. Because originally I wasn't going to play. I was meant to get an award, be presented inducted into the Heavy Metal Hall of Fame. And I agreed to do that, you know, say hello to the fans. And then they said, would you get up and play a couple of songs, you know? And that came about with Ross the Boss. And that was very cool to do, you know. And then after that, you know, I did the show with Ripper and Les Binks. I was meant to just be playing a couple of songs with the Dave Ellison band, who was coming to England, who was booked into a venue which I'm an ambassador of, KK Steel Mill in Wolverhampton. And they asked me to play a couple of songs, you know, and as the ambassador of the venue, it's hard to say no. So I said yes. And then a mutual friend said, I'll fly Ripper over. And it just grew and grew and grew. So we did about an hour, you know. Yeah. And then after that, I thought about it. And I thought, no, I'm not gonna be lucky to form a band and then sit down to write an album and find I'm stuck, you know. So I did that Christmas, I sat down on my own and had a look, see if I had an album in me. And after 4 weeks, I had everything, you know, lyrics, melody lines, all the music, everything in 4 weeks at the most. And I was amazed.
Wow.
And I thought, I'm not going to embarrass myself. Hey, I can still write some songs, guys. Let's form a band. And that's kind of how it happened. But just prior to that, I did ask the other guys in Judas Priest. I said, look, is the door open or is it closed? And they went, it's permanently closed. I had asked before for whatever reasons. They're happy. They're doing what they're doing. So I thought, okay, there's full license to get on. And I still felt that I'm not going to discard everything, who I am, what I've done, what I've achieved, the whole legacy. I'm going to carry some of that with me, you know, forward, you know, so I can be in the past, the present and the future, you know, with everything I do. And I think I should, you know, I can't spend a lifetime doing one thing and then just disown it, because there's elements of that that people are going to want from me, you know. Do they want me to play the sinner? Yes. I want to play the sinner. You know, I want to play Victim Changes, whatever. I want to play some stuff that I always wanted to play that never got played, you know. So I want to do that. I want to do KK Priest material, the Ripper years, some stuff that I never got to play from probably 1970, the early days, you know. And record a killer live album and DVD.
Awesome.
Gotta be done with that kind of mixture of music.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends, Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Yeah, I want to talk about a little bit about how you put these songs together. Are you someone who's like a home studio guy where you just record yourself? So you've essentially put together your own demos all on your own.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, drums, bass. I can do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd never done completely lyric wise and and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Because Rob would step in at some point. Rob used to go away and write lyrics and song ideas and, you know, stuff like that. Myself and Glenn, we would work separately to start with, then get together and then pick what we thought. Well, we would argue a bit, but not very much, really. I was quite happy if Glenn said, I don't like that bit of music, then I'll go, fine, I'll put it back into the catalogue, you know. And but I was so inspired to do this, you know, with all the, you know, the message and the rejoicing. And there's a lot, it's very in-depth, this album. It's very meaningful, you know. Every song has a story. It has a meaning to me. And you know, and it was about that camaraderie. Because I'm a fan as well. I'm still a fan. I still go to concerts and watch bands. And, you know, in a lot of ways, it's just as good as being on the stage. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I'm the same way. I mean, I live in Los Angeles. And, you know, since the pandemic, we haven't had shows here. So it's been... Yeah. But they're just about to open up this next week, and the Whiskey is reopening, and a bunch of kind of 80s bands or metal bands are playing over there. So I would say metal, rock, heavy music, whatever you want to call it. It's church for people without religion, right?
Yeah.
And so it's I need to go there to kind of be amongst my tribe, and then we kind of go through this collective catharsis through the music and get out whatever frustrations and, you know, just singing along. But it's the same thing at church, right? You go to church and everyone sings a hymn, right? Or if you're in a Islamic faith, they have their chants that they do together. And that whole kind of communal thing. It's the reason why almost every religion has music involved.
You've got to say, when you're there and you've been through the support bands and you know the headliner's coming on and you don't know what to expect, because I never watch, if I'm going to see a band, I never watch it on YouTube or something, to spoil the moment. But anyway, if you do watch it on YouTube, it's different to actually being there, isn't it? You know, but the anticipation of the band coming on stage and breaking, you know, it's, you know, and that's what keeps us going, isn't it? You know, and just to say, I was there, been there, saw the show, and bought the T-shirt, so to speak.
Well, you saw Hendrix six times, so I think you have me beat more than anything. So, no, but it's interesting because you're 69, right? I just turned 40. And even me at my age, you know, you kind of get people maybe looking at you like, when are you going to grow up? You know, there's this thing, and I almost feel like it's this, it's an affliction, it's a disease. We're just wired a certain way, the lifers amongst us. So is that what I have to look forward to? That this like bug to just be around this music and this culture is just going to be with me forever? That need to want to get on stage? Is it something that's just in us forever?
Yeah, it will be. You know, once you know, we all take our music with us through life. You know, it's very special and we covet it, you know. Lots of fans have never been on stage and played in a band. You know, everything is still very special to them because they've got the memories of those concerts. It's like me. Unfortunately, I spent that much time being in a band. Look how many gigs I missed out on, you know.
Yeah, all the time.
But, I mean, I was fortunate because... Even when we've got bands I want to see that are playing with us, I don't get to see the show. I might see a song or two. Then I have to do interviews and stuff like that. So I've missed out on so many shows, you know, by being in a band. But obviously there's something very special about being up there and, you know, and presenting yourself to the audience. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, we're very similar. You know, I don't know. I feel like we're cut from the same cloth. Cause I do that same thing. I'll have some tours booked, and then I'll see the other tours. I'm like, damn, I'm gonna miss this show. I'm gonna miss that show.
Yeah, You know, it's so crap when you, like, you've got a three-day festival, you know what I mean? Like, Download, and the headliner's like, you know, Maiden one night, Kiss the next night or something, you know? And you think, ah, oh, and you're just there for one day, you know, and you don't get to see all of the bands. You know, you have to fly off to another festival in Holland or something, or Germany.
It was funny. Bad Wolves was on this festival in Florida, and Fort Rock, I think it was called, and the band had 3 days off, and I wanted to hang out because I had family there, and the next day, Ozzy was playing. So I just stayed, and they left with the van because they went to leave. I was like, fuck you guys. So I just stayed, and I flew to the next show just so I could see Ozzy.
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah, I can fully understand that because you're so close, you know. You just don't want to miss that opportunity. I can fully understand that.
Plus, you know, you got the backstage pass. You're like, you have carte blanche. It's like,
yeah,
it was a free ticket as far as I'm concerned. I want to talk about the band you put together. I mean, obviously, you have a relationship with Ripper from him previously being in Judas Priest. I mean, have you and Tim kept a relationship going these years since you split apart?
Yeah, on and off, we have. I go to see Ripper whenever I can when he's in the UK. Mm. You know, I've seen him several times doing the Disciples of Dio. And the other time Ripper went out, I think he played all of Jugulated, the whole album, I think, with his band. It was amazing. And I was in the audience.
Yeah.
I was in the audience. I was. His voice is just so incredible, you know. You know, it was, I'm pretty sure, I'll have to check with him. I'm sure he played the whole thing, you know, but all credit to him. Yeah, we've kept in touch.
What about the rest of the band? Was it something, did you know guys, or did management put that together? How did you figure out all these players?
Well, originally, obviously, I definitely wanted, because Les played with us, Les Binks, obviously, you played with us on a couple of albums in the 70s. Obviously, he's a great drummer, he's a great technician, you know, and so he played the gig at the Steel Mill with us, and so Les was definitely in, you know, but by the time it all came around to the recording, you know, Les had suffered an injury, you know, and wasn't able to do it, sadly. So then it wasn't exactly panic mode, but it kind of was a bit, you know, so we had to find another drummer. But actually, fortunately, Ripper came over. We were able to do his vocals, you know, here at my place. And we were checking out drummers. And we eventually checked out Sean Elg, who had just been playing with Ripper in the UK with the Disciple, the Three Tremors. And they played some Priest stuff, you know, Painkiller and stuff like that. And so we felt sure that he was our guy. So we were able to get him over really quick. And the drums got put down as well. Right, just when Ripper went back, everything stopped. You know, hotels closed, studios were closed. Because obviously we were in the studio with our drummer. And everything stopped. It was kind of uncanny. But I was in a good position, really, because I was able to carry on working with everything that had been recorded. And of course, now with the internet, we could fly files around left, right, and center. So it all works, you know. It's a bit more long-winded, but we got it done. But yeah, we got the drums in the studio just north of London down there, luckily. And so Sean was our choice there. And Tony, the bass player, was obviously, well, actually, Tony started the band Voodoo 6 with Richie Faulkner years ago. Mm. So Tony's a killer bass player. Tony mixes out front. He's an engineer, producer, songwriter as well. He's a good all-round guy. But he did the out front mixing for me when I played with Ross the Boss and when I did the Steel Mill with Ripper. He did the out front sound. And so Tony's a great all-round guy, but as you can probably hear from the album, if you heard it, is
I did. Well, I heard four songs.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, the objective for me was to be able to hear everything that the bass player, to be able to hear everything that everybody does on the record, you know. Because when you turn the clock to the 60s and the 70s, that's what we did as fans. We would play the record, listen to all the bass, we'd listen to all the drums, you know, we'd listen to just about, just to get those extra little bits that we might miss if we listened to it collectively. Mm. That's what we did as fans, you know, to folk. But that those were in the days when you had a vinyl, it wouldn't last more than a week before you started to get all scratched up, you know, and noisy.
See, and so, they think vinyl's the best. That's why I was, my problem with vinyl is I was always terrible at putting the needle down. I always needed one of those players that would do it automatically because I always would screw it up. So,
yeah. If this is what used to happen to us, even if you got one of those, because it was in the old days, it was too slow. You wanted to get the record on now. So you kept on doing it manually. You know, you could go through the process where it moved over slow, but it was too slow. You got a new record. You wanted to put it on, you know, and keep moving it back, you know.
Oh, yeah. So there's certain things that I feel like you've either talked about a lot in the press or, you know, I imagine you're doing a lot of press. You're getting a lot of the same questions. So I don't want to kind of beat you over the head with too much repetition. So, you know, from what I've read, there was some disagreements about what happened when you left Priest. Did you retire? Were you?
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You were kind of forced out, it seems like.
Yeah, I kind of skirted through that period in my book, really. I didn't really go into that much detail, you know. But no, I didn't retire. Absolutely didn't. Well, in 2010, things were coming to a boil. Things were happening. I wasn't happy with the previous tour because, you know, I mean, I love Glenn and respect him a lot, but he used to have too many beers before and during the concert at the time. And I don't know what was going on. You know, we had words about it, but musically we weren't as foot sure as I felt I wanted to be. I wasn't really happy with that. You know, it was rock and roll. You know, it's one of those things, you know, it's rock and roll, or you're in a band that really wants to lock it in tight, you know, and that's why I used to get off on musically, you know, was being really solid and locked in, you know, with those kick drums. Yeah, well, you know what it's like.
You're either the kids,
Richards, you've got a beer in one hand and a cigarette in the other, but you still play the guitar, you know, or you really like digging deep, you know. But you know, it's a long-winded thing, but Rob was doing a lot of things with his own band, touring, doing the Ozfest. He released two studio albums the year I left, in that year, 2010. Yeah. You know, it was... And then I was getting pressure to do an EP, and I'm going, we're not an EP band, and it was a farewell tour. We were all retiring.
Supposedly.
We were all retiring. That was the deal. You know, I saw the press releases saying that the end of the band and all of this, and I don't know, everything. Maybe I just, you know, just had some kind of breakdown. And I went, just, you know what, have it. You want it. It's yours. You know, have it. But what actually happened was a friend of mine was really encouraging me to do the tour. And he was saying the right things, I guess. Look, you've been there this long. It's just one more tour. You've got to complete the journey. And so I was starting to talk to Ian over a period of about a week, saying, Ian, I think, you know, maybe I'll do it. Because I'd ordered some guitar processors from Germany and stuff to do the tour. I was going to do it. And I was talking to Ian about doing it. And I fully expected to get a message from the management saying, are you going to do it? Is it true you want to do it? But I never heard anything. And I didn't get the right feedback from Ian. My friend was giving me all of his encouragement, but I wasn't getting the same sort of thing back from Ian, because me and Ian went to kindergarten together. We've been there every minute of this journey, you know. But he wasn't saying the things that my friend was saying. you know, but he would have been relaying things back to camp, back to base, but they weren't coming through. So they sent the press release that we're going to release, because they, you know, saying we're going to release this tomorrow. Are you okay with the wording? And I said to Ian, can you email me the set list over? Let me see the set list, which he did. And I phoned him back saying, Ian, it looks great. You know, I thought it would be, you know, all Glenn's choices, or, you know, the manner. And it looks great. And but the next morning, I sent the press release out saying I'd retired. So I sent him my second letter saying that, this is the truth, forget everything I said in my previous letter. So I was trying to bail out amicably, you know.
Yeah.
And also knowing that those guys would have the purse strings, in all fairness, and we were going to have to, and I was a director of the company and everything, I knew I was going to speak to them. But in the second letter, I just flipped and said, and I told the truth, why I really quit 3 months earlier. You know, but they still told the fans and the world that I retired to look after my golf course. No, I didn't. I had professional managers. It had been open six years.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't true. And I hated it, because I've had to carry this burden now where the fans think, oh, KK's an a-hole because he deserted us. He did this to look after his golf course or retire. Not true. Straight away, I went into producing the Violent Storm album with Roy Z. I asked Roy Z to help me out on that one, because, you know, I was doing some other things as well. You know, straight away, I did the arranging for all of the songs, you know, helping out. And that album turned out pretty good, you know. And that was the band called Violent Storm with Mick Savino from Blackmore's Night and Richie and Yngwie Malmsteen, you know. And then I went to do other things, you know, mentoring younger bands. I recorded Beyond the Realms again with Les. And Ripper was on that as well, wasn't he? I think Ripper was on that as well. So I continue to do things all the time, but always expecting that there would be an opening, you know. And when Glenn retired, I fully expected that would be the opening, you know. But they never called me. They just so essentially, you know, those guys are going out there playing my songs and stuff like that. So if they can call themselves priests, I feel totally entitled to be a priest also.
Yeah, listen.
And to be able to play my songs.
Listen, I think people are going to be really excited for it. I think they are excited for it. And, you know, you're part of this history and this legacy that has affected so many lives. You're rock royalty, as they say, and I really believe people will treat you as such. So I think we have to wrap up now, but I just want to thank you. I had more questions, but it's all good.
Obviously we're musos, we could talk forever, couldn't we, you know. But I just want to say to all the fans, thank you so much for being on the journey with me from all of those decades ago, and let's pick up where we left off. And I hope you like the music. And I'm very much looking forward to playing a show. We'll bring the show to as many towns and cities as we possibly can. I really look forward to it. And again, Doc, thank you, and good luck with your band and your musical journey. And thank you very much for having me on the show.
Of course, congratulations on the album.
Thank you, buddy.
So that was Hellfire Thunderbolt, the brand new single from KK's Priest, and that is from the album Sermons of the Sinner, which will be out August 20th on Explorer One Music Group. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. I was, like I said, a little on the shorter side for what I'm used to, but I was grateful to get every minute with KK. Thank you so much to him and Jamie. I could listen to the stories all day, especially about the back in the day stuff and hearing about Cream and Jimi Hendrix and all that stuff, because I mean, he was there. He was there for it. And look at all this music and art and history that we have to show for it. So that was wonderful. I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation. And yeah, I don't really have anything else going on. So I'm just rocking. All right. I got tomorrow I have to do my other show, Last Words on the Pit. And we have Angel Vivaldi, who was on this show, the second episode ever. So I have to get ready for that. And I'm trying to write some music. Hopefully Bad Wolves will have a song out soon. We're just waiting for mixes to get finished. And I've watched a lot of NBA playoffs and sweating a lot. So that's my life. All right. And I gotta write some music, right? I gotta get it done. All right. That's what needs to do. Make things. Build. All right. I'm yammering. I love you guys. Thank you for listening to the show. And Mamba's out.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.